Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Perfect Gentleman by Candice Camp, narrated by Gildert Jackson. Prologue, 1871. Abby tucked her hand into Graham's arm and they started up the stairs. Everyone was watching them. Afraid she might stumble or do something equally embarrassing in front of them all, she was grateful for his support. She cast a shy glance up at the man beside her and was struck all over again by how handsome Graham was, the clean-cut profile and firm masculine chin, the full mouth that could curve up in a smile that made her heart lift in her chest, the blue eyes rimmed by sinfully thick lashes, a shade darker than his brown hair. More amazing still, he was hers. She ducked her head to hide the little smile of pleasure. She was Mrs. Graham Parr now. No, Lady Montclair. No, that couldn't be right either, for he would not be Lord Montclair until his father died. All the names and titles were confusing. It was best to avoid the subject altogether. Abigail had found that in London the wisest course of action was to keep one's mouth shut. Not that Graham was ever unkind. He was a perfect gentleman, the sort hostesses relied on to dance with the wallflowers or spend a few minutes talking to the old ladies. Unfailingly pleasant and polite, he treated her, as he did everyone, with quiet courtesy. He had not once gotten that supercilious look on his face that other English people did when she said a name wrong. How could anyone expect Worcester to be pronounced like that? And he kept a polite expression on his face the few times she did say something, no matter how banal it was. He did not love her, of course. Abby was well aware that her attraction lay in her father's fortune, not her face and figure. And in truth, between the chaperones and social activities, the two of them hadn't been alone enough to become more than acquainted. But Graham would be good to her, kind, and she would earn his love. Abby was certain of that. She was now a married woman, out from under her father's thumb, with a husband who would not scold or try to rule her every movement. She stole another look at her groom. Deep lines bracketed his mouth, and he had shadows beneath his eyes. Like her, she thought, he had been unable to sleep well recently. How could one, with the myriad of things to do before a wedding? All the running about, meeting so many people that made her head swim, the nerves that would not quiet. Still, the set look on his face seemed too grim for mere wariness. Was he angry? Only minutes ago she had noticed him talking to her father. Thurston Price had a way of infuriating people, snapping out orders as if one must scurry to do his bidding. Of course, most people did, including her. But it didn't matter. She was free of her father now. They were free of him. Tomorrow they'd be off on a month-long tour of the continent, alone, just as they would be tonight. Her fingers tightened on his arm. For the first time, she would be truly alone with her husband. The thought was intoxicating, and a little frightening. She was decidedly uncertain of the details. No one would say anything clear about what went on. Even her maid, Molly, on whom she could usually rely, was little help, having been a spinster all her life. "Just trust in his lordship," was Molly's best advice. "He seems like a gentleman, even if he is British." Molly, whose mother hailed from Glasgow, had an inbred distrust of all things English. Molly was right, of course. Graham was a perfect gentleman. Unlike her father, he would not roar at her over a mistake. Still, she could not help but wish that this night was over, that it was tomorrow morning and they were starting out on their life together. Abigail had looped the train of her wedding dress over her arm to make certain she did not trip over it, and it was beginning to weigh on her arm. The long veil and the intricate hairstyle beneath it were heavy as well, and her corset, fastened more tightly than normal to create the perfect wasp waist, made it impossible to draw a full breath. Leaving the stairs, they started down the long hallway to their suite. It seemed to Abby that Graham's pace picked up and she wondered if it was eagerness or merely the same excess of nerves she felt. Her heart was pounding as he opened the door and stepped back, politely ushering her into the room. She walked inside, hearing the door close heavily behind them. She wasn't sure what to do, much less what to say. Her cheeks flushed as the silence stretched, and finally, curiosity overcoming her shyness, she turned to look at him. He stood facing her, that same tense look on his face. The nerves in Abigail's stomach tightened. "What?" she began, not even sure what she was asking. Is something wrong?" He let out a short, humorless huff of a laugh. "What isn't wrong?" The blood drained from her face, and a buzzing began in her ears, so loud she could not make out his words. She clenched her hands, drawing a deep breath, willing herself not to faint. "But I'm not dancing to his tune," Graham was saying when her ears cleared. His eyes were hard in a way she'd never seen them. "Or yours."
"Excuse me?"
Her voice came out barely more than a whisper.
"Your father may have bought you a husband, but he did not buy a puppet." I don't understand." "Then I shall make it as clear as I possibly can."
He took a long stride toward her, his eyes implacable.
"The two of you have the title you wanted so much, the name you coveted, but that is all you acquired. I am not here to provide him with future earls carrying his bloodline. I made this bargain to save my family, not to stand at stud for the prices."
Abigail drew in a sharp breath, as stunned as if he had slapped her.
"That surprises you? Are you so incapable of human feeling?"
His words came out fast and furious, raining down like stones on her bruised heart.
"Did you honestly think, knowing I loved another, that I would just slide into your bed, that I would be your lapdog? You'd best think again. I will never be a husband to you in anything but name."
Abby could not speak, could not move, could only stare at him in bleak horror. It took every ounce of will to keep her trembling knees from collapsing under her. Graham despised her. This perfect gentleman, this kind husband, who she had thought would be her lifelong shelter, in fact wanted nothing to do with her. He loved someone else. Graham paused, watching her as if he expected a reply. Pain and loss and fury swirled inside Abby, almost choking her.
"I see."
His mouth twisted. "I thought you would." Turning on his heel, he strode to the door. He tossed the hotel room key onto the lamp table and walked out of the room. Abigail continued to stand, gazing at the blank expanse of the door, still too stunned to move. Her legs began to tremble until they could not hold her any longer, and she sank to her knees, a low cry escaping her. Reaching up, she wrenched the delicate veil from her head, and at last she gave way to sobs. Chapter 1, 1881. There was someone in his room. Graham's eyes flew open, and he found himself staring at a massive square head on a level with his eyes. The dog regarded him unblinkingly, its graying forehead creased as if in deep concern. Graham, muscles instinctively tensed, relaxed, letting out a sigh.
"Good Lord, James!"
Graham turned his gaze toward the man in the doorway, shoulder carelessly braced against the frame.
"A fellow could have a heart attack waking up with that beast staring at one. And what the devil are you doing in my room at the crack of dawn?"
"Hardly the crack of dawn, cousin."
The lean, dark man snorted and strolled farther into the bedroom, his grey eyes reflecting an icy amusement.
"We've already eaten breakfast and driven over from Grace Hill. Even my mother is up and about, and you know Tessa is never seen before noon."
Graham sat up, wincing, and raised a hand to his head.
"I had trouble going to sleep last night."
"Too much brandy, eh?"
James crossed to the window and thrust aside the draperies, letting in a shaft of light that stabbed straight into Graham's eyes. Graham turned his head away, but with a sigh swung his legs out of bed and stood up.
"I thought you were in London."
"We returned yesterday."
James picked up the dressing gown lying on the back of the chair and tossed it to Graham.
"That doesn't explain what you're doing in my house." He pulled on the robe, adding darkly, "Or why Fletcher let you come up to roust me out of bed?"
"Oh, he tried to stop me." James tugged at the tasseled cord to summon Graham's valet. "Surely you don't think I listened?"
"Of course not." Graham rubbed his hands over his face, trying to pull his scattered thoughts together. "You say Aunt Tessa is here too?"
"Indeed."
"But why? Was it possible he had so overslept? He had consumed a good deal of brandy last night. He had been somewhat at loose ends. Well, he might as well admit it. He had been crushingly bored. But surely he could hold his liquor better than that." Graham glanced toward the clock. "It's barely 10. I've never known Aunt Tessa to venture out before noon."
"Ah, but we have been charged by the Dowager Countess to deliver a message to you. Mother would never miss that opportunity, even if she had to rise at your proverbial crack of dawn. Gossip, after all, is her métier."
"Gossip? What are you talking about?"
"Get dressed and come downstairs, and I'll tell you in detail."
James strolled to the door, slapping his hand against his thigh to summon the gigantic mastiff, which had grown bored with the talk and was now stretched out on the floor, taking up what looked to be a third of the room.
"Your mother is, of course, insisting on laying out a second breakfast for us all."
"James," Graham said through clenched teeth, letting his words drop one by one like stones, "what in the bloody hell is going on?"
"Lady Montclair is in London."
"My grandmother?" Graham frowned in confusion. "But, well, of course she's in London. You just said she'd given you—"
"I'm not talking about the Dowager Countess. I meant the other Lady Montclair."
"My mother? But she's—"
"I meant," James said with heavy emphasis, "the third Lady Montclair. Your wife."
With that parting shot, Graham's cousin turned and walked out, the mastiff padding at his heels. Graham stared after him, frozen. His wife! He sat down hard on the ottoman in front of the chair. The pounding in his head increased its beat. His wife! He tried to summon up an image of the woman he had married 10 years ago, tall, thin, and drab, her black hair a stark contrast to pale skin. Quiet and always dressed in white, she had faded into the background. He had paid little attention to her looks, other than to see she was nothing like Laura. She had large eyes. He could not recall their colour, but he remembered them fixed on him, watching, measuring. He'd had no idea what was in her head. In truth, he hadn't cared to know. She had, he thought now, sat like a spider in her web, waiting while her father pulled him in. Resentment and anger, long buried, stirred in him. They had wanted a title, Abigail Price and her father, and they'd had enough money to pay for it. And if their fortune was not enough to secure it, they had other means. Graham had known he had to marry wealth to save the estate. He'd been prepared to do his duty, even if it meant giving up Laura, the woman he loved. What he hadn't expected was that they would blackmail him into it. But Thurston Price was not the sort to leave anything to chance. Grimly, Graham rose and began to dress, not bothering to wait for his valet. What had possessed the woman to come back? His life had been, well, maybe not happy, but comfortable with her far away in New York. It was not the cozy future he had once envisioned with the woman he loved, raising their children, growing old together. But at least he was spared the daily presence of the wife he'd never wanted. There had been a bit of a scandal, of course, what with his bride fleeing on their wedding night, and one couldn't explain to everyone that he was happy to see her gone. But the family had weathered that. He had kept the estate intact. He had concealed the stain on the family name. And he had his solitude, his undisturbed peace. What could Abigail Price want from him now? He had given her the name she and her father had so desperately coveted. She had the life she wanted in the far-off city where she belonged. It had been something of a shock 10 years ago when he returned to her hotel suite the day after their wedding, armed with an apology for his blunt, even rude, assessment of their marriage the night before, as well as a proposal for living politely apart, only to be informed that his wife had checked out that morning. His astonishment was quickly replaced by relief that, just as he'd thought, Abigail had been interested only in acquiring a title. Having obtained that, she has raced back to her own country. She had remained there for 10 years, apparently as content as he to live without the burden of a spouse. He had heard, now and then, rumours of how she reigned in splendour in New York society, her parties the most elegant, her invitations the most sought after, but in truth he had little interest in what she did, as long as she did it an ocean away from him. When he strode into the dining-room downstairs a few minutes later, he found the others waiting for him, James standing at the window a few feet apart from the two middle-aged women seated side by side at the table. The sweet-faced woman in black, her brown hair liberally sprinkled with white, was his mother, and she looked up at him with her usual smile. She was a softened, slightly faded, and pleasingly plump version of the woman beside her, whose thick, dark hair, startlingly silver eyes and lush curves, still brought men clustering around her. "Mother," he went around the table and bent to kiss his mother's cheek. "Aunt Tessa, how kind of you to visit." Graham smiled. One could not help but smile at his aunt. Aunt Tessa, of course, rose as he turned to her and flung her arms around him. "Graham, my favourite nephew!" She stepped back, hands on his arms, and tilted her head, studying him. "Handsome as ever, I see." "Your only nephew," he reminded her, "and you are as radiant as ever." "Flatterer," Tessa smiled in her impish way. "Just what I like in a man."
"Mother, must you flirt with every man you see?" James joined them.
"Don't be such a stodgy old man." Tessa turned the same fetching grin on her son. "One has to practice one's art when one can, you know."
"So I've noticed."
James sat down beside her, nodding toward Graham.
"Better get yourself a cup of tea, cuz. You'll need it. A dollop of whiskey might help."
Graham sat down, accepting the cup of tea the butler poured. He took a sip and gave a nod to Fletcher, who discreetly melted away, closing the door behind him. "Very well, I am braced for the worst. What is going on, and why did Grandmother send you?"
"I told you, your absent and very unlamented wife has returned to London."
"Really, James," Tessa protested, "you haven't the faintest idea how to tell a story properly." She turned to her nephew, eyes sparkling. "She appeared last Tuesday at Lady Rochester's soiree. No one had the least idea who she was. She was wearing this marvellous satin gown of midnight blue with the most wonderful lace draped—"
"I don't think Graham is concerned with the style ball gown she wore," James interrupted dryly.
"Mirabel and I are," Tessa addressed her sister. "It was just divine, Mira. You should have seen the satin roses over the bustle. It was made by Worth, or I know nothing of fashion." "No one would dispute your eye for clothes, Aunt Tessa," Graham said with more amiability than Tessa's son. "But why is Abigail here?" "I haven't the faintest idea," Tessa gave a careless shrug. "Neither has anyone else. But, of course, everyone is guessing like mad. Lady Crowley is certain she's come to confront you. But you know Lady Crowley. She is always so dramatic." Graham shot a laughing glance at his cousin at the prospect of Aunt Tessa's deeming anyone dramatic. "But what would she confront me about?" "That is why everyone is so interested, darling boy." "Surely she could not be angry with Graham," Mirabel frowned. "It was she who left him, after all," she sighed.
"And she seemed such an unexceptionable girl. I rather liked her."
"You like everyone, Mirabel," Tessa took up her tale again. "The most popular theory is that she has come to act as a matchmaker."
"Matchmaker? What are you talking about?" A sizzle of alarm ran up Graham's spine.
"For wealthy American girls, dear. They say she will use her British connections to find noblemen in desperate need of an infusion of cash and match them up with American heiresses. After all, she did it for herself."
"What connections?" Graham asked. "She has no British connections."
"There's you," James pointed out.
"I'm not going to help her find her victims," Graham said in an affronted voice.
"You know that, but does she?" James retorted. Personally, I think you should help her if it means she'll leave the city.
Of course, there are those who believe she simply wants to flaunt her, friend in your face.
Friend? Graham's voice iced over. What friend? There's an American who dances attendance on her. Apparently he's a business associate of her father's.
Business associate?
Graham's lip curled.
Fellow crook is more like it. Is her father here as well?
No, James told him. Thurston's still in America, no doubt perpetrating stock swindles on other unsuspecting souls.
At least there's some relief in that. I don't know how that dreadful man can do such things,
Mirabel said, her eyes suddenly glinting with tears.
Poor Reginald! He had no idea!
No, of course not, Mother.
It's my opinion Thurston Price should have gone to jail, enticing innocent people to invest in something just so he could make an enormous profit, then leaving them to crash.
Mirabel pulled a handkerchief from her pocket and dabbed at her eyes. Her sister reached over and patted her hand.
Reggie always was inclined to great optimism.
Yes, he was, wasn't he?
Mirabel gave her a tremulous smile.
It was one of the many things everyone loved about him.
Everyone had loved his father altogether too much, Graham thought, but he said only,
Unfortunately, what Mr. Price did was not illegal.
Humph! Only wicked, Mirabel sniffed.
Yes, wicked indeed. But that is long past. It has nothing to do with why Miss Pri... I mean, Lady Montclair is here. Is she having...
He glanced at the women.
I beg your pardon, Mother, Aunt Tessa. This is not a fit topic for ladies.
Good heavens, Graham, don't stop just when you're getting to the interesting part, Tessa exclaimed. One can be too polite, you know.
Graham looked at James, whose eyes were brimming with laughter.
Oh, very well. Is she having an affair with this American chap?
I have no idea, James shrugged. The thought doesn't seem to disturb you.
I don't care what she does. If she thinks to hurt me with an affair, she's fair and far off.
But, Graham, dear, his mother said in a soft voice, what about the heir? What if she, you know, bore another man's son? What would you do?
It would be a dreadful scandal,
Tessa agreed, her voice threaded with excitement. Even if she doesn't have a child, it makes for titillating gossip. Merely by appearing in London again, it has stirred up all the old gossip. Everyone is rehashing the wedding.
Oh, that ostentatious display!
Mirabel shook her head.
Perhaps more importantly, James added, there was the matter of the new bride taking to her heels the following morning.
Yes, really, Graham, couldn't you have held on to her for longer than a night?
Tessa asked. His mother whirled on her.
Tessa, it wasn't Graham's fault. He could hardly have kept her prisoner. I'm sure leaving is what she had in mind all along.
Well,
Tessa turned up her hands in an eloquently questioning manner,
there were all those rumours.
Could we please not discuss the details of my wedding night? Graham ran his hand back through his hair.
You said grandmother sent you with a message for me. What is it?
She wants you to come back to London and deal with your wife, James said tersely. It's Lady Eugenia's opinion you should bring her to the estate where she can't create any more talk.
Bring her here? To Lidcombe Hall? Graham straightened. You can't be serious. She wants me to live with Abigail?
Men have been known to live with their wives, James offered mildly.
I won't. I refuse to have her here, to subject my mother to...
Oh, no, dear, I won't mind. Mirabel leaned across the table and patted his hand. Truly, I'm sure she cannot be that disagreeable. It's a large house. No doubt we could all rub along well enough for a while, at least until the scandal dies down. Maybe she regrets running off like that years ago. It could have been a momentary impulse, just a fit of nerves, you know, and now she would like another chance.
"Speaking of great optimism," Graham said in an exasperated voice. He sighed and squeezed his mother's hand gently.
"No, I don't think the Prices are given to fits of nerves. I don't know what she wants, but I feel sure it is nothing good. And grandmother is right, as always. I shall have to go to London to settle the matter."
"Will you bring her back here?" Mirabel asked. "What room, I wonder, should I make up for her?"
"Don't bother, Mother. I don't intend to bring Abigail home. I am going to make sure she leaves." Chapter 2 2 hours later, Graham was on the road in James's carriage, rolling toward London. The train would have been faster, Graham remarked, twitching aside the curtain to gaze out.
"I found that other passengers tend to resent having Dem on board." James nodded toward the brindle mastiff lying sprawled across the floor of the carriage. The dog responded with a thump of his tail against the door.
"Can't imagine why. After all, he does leave a few inches open where one can place one's feet." The corner of James's mouth twitched in something that might have been a smile.
"Buck up, cuz, it doesn't take long. Even my mother managed it."
That would have been something worth seeing. Graham tried to imagine his luxuriously dressed aunt in close proximity to the animal.
There was a bit of a contretemps over his drooling on a ruffle.
One would think you're more attached to that dog than you are to your own brothers.
James shrugged. Well, you've met my brothers.
Point taken. After a moment he went on. You didn't need to haul me back to the city, you know. I would have gone anyway.
Ah, but I have a direct order from the Dowager Countess. I wouldn't dare do otherwise. It doesn't matter. I would have returned in a day or two anyway. My cousin Maurice has graced us with a visit. Over a day in his company, and I would likely be jailed for homicide.
He cast a sideways glance at Graham.
I saw a letter from Miss Hinsdale on the entry table.
Beside him, Graham tightened. She has kept up a correspondence with Mother. Her late mother was my mother's friend, you know. Don't worry, I have no correspondence with her.
James quirked an eyebrow. You think I care if you write her, that my morals would be offended?
No, you simply were, and always are, the voice of cool reason.
It comes in handy now and again.
I rarely see Laura, only sometimes at a party when she comes to London to visit her aunt and cousin. I don't pursue her. Seeing her now and then was difficult enough. Her slim, serene, blonde beauty awakened far too many thoughts it was better to keep buried, reminding him all over again how much he had lost. I wouldn't cast any doubt on her honour. No doubt that strikes you as laughable.
No, unfamiliar, perhaps.
James studied the other man for a moment.
You still feel the same about Miss Hinsdale?
Do I still love her? Yes, of course. Do you think I would just forget her, like a lost toy?
It's been 10 years, Graham. Even widows move into half-mourning eventually.
Love doesn't die just because time passes, Graham shot back. But that is something you wouldn't know about. He stopped abruptly, and the temper that had flared in his eyes died. I'm sorry, James. I shouldn't have said that.
Why not? It's common knowledge that I am unacquainted with the gentler emotions. As I remember, you told me the same thing after my, conversation with Miss Hinsdale.
I stopped laying the blame for that at your door long ago. I know you had the best of intentions when you convinced Laura not to marry me. You did it for the family's sake.
James snorted. To hell with the family. If you think I gave a farthing for your dragon of a grandmother, or the Pa name, or that beloved land of yours, you're mad as a hatter. I spoke to Miss Hinsdale to keep you from making a foolish, lovesick mistake.
James turned his gaze to his cuffs, tugging them into perfect alignment.
Besides, if I'd let you follow your love into poverty, I would have had you and your beautiful lady turning up on my doorstep as well. It's bad enough having to support my siblings.
Ah, of course. A faint smile hovered on Graham's lips. Well, you needn't be concerned, cousin. I assure you that I do not weep into my pillow every night or spend my days bemoaning my fate. I am well content with my books and managing my beloved land, and the occasional foray into London for a bit of recreation. Graham saw no reason to mention the ennui that seemed to tighten its hold on him almost daily, or the loneliness that would settle on him in the evening. He would not reveal the way his heart sped up when he happened to see Laura at a party, or how eagerly he went forward to take her hand in greeting, how he would stand across the room drinking in the way she looked, so that he could take out the memory later and savour it.
Least of all would he tell James of the emptiness that dwelt deep inside him, a hollow space that neither duty nor brandy, nor even the soft warm body of an occasional mistress could fill.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?